I'm willing to accept what you say as fact.
Thank you.
For the purposes.
Son of a bitch.
Oh my God, Dave.
Son
come
of
on.
A bitch.
How do you not turn the phone off during the podcast? Oh, man.
All right. We'll take this segment again.
Oh, and now it's an important call? Now leave a recording. I'm going to monologue here.
Fine.
I'm just going to go on. Oh, he's talking to somebody. Listen, people. If you're in a theater, if you're at a wedding, if you're at church, I don't care where you are, actually. You turn the phone off. I mean, on vibrate or something. Every phone's got it. What's going on? Well, now that I've got this time alone with me and the mic, and Dave's kind of in the background talking over me, I'd like to talk to you about the fine products made by the Microsoft Corporation. You got your Windows 7. You got your Xbox 360. You got your, I don't know, other things. I just love the people at Microsoft.
Disguise for me, come into the open when it's cold outside. Am I here in vain? Hold on to the night, there will be no shame. Always I wanna be.
Welcome to I'm Trying to Think, episode 29. We're here always, Dave, or bi-weekly.
Yeah, bi-weekly, I think. Always, eventually, because this is not a room that I think is equipped for a full-time, always-living facility.
No, not quite. That was Always by Erasure, and this is episode 29 of I'm Trying to Think. I'm your host, Chuck Warner, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Dave Stern.
Again, we're not saying, not as always, as bi-weekly.
As bi-weekly.
That's less punchy, though. That's less punchy.
With me as bi-weekly is my co-host, Dave Stern. Say hello, Dave.
Hey.
All right. I'm Trying to Think is a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. You can find them at foundation-institute.org. I've only been doing this for 29 episodes.
I don't know. This time you've... You've sort of put some new wrinkles in. You're putting in a lot of dramatic pauses, like, and you're also putting in this new thing where you get things wrong.
Yeah, and a lot of motions with my hands.
Which is great for podcasting.
Which is great for podcasting. Yeah. And you could visit I'm Trying to Think on the web at imtryingtothink.com. Got that right?
Yep.
No one does, but you can.
A couple people do.
We're just enabling. I mean, we're not here to force you. And you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/I'm Trying to Think, which literally several people do.
Mm-hmm. I believe the amount of digits is double.
And you can become a fan of I'm Trying to Think on Facebook by going to Facebook and looking for I'm Trying to Think and finding it and becoming a fan, which is an easy process.
Also, that was tautological.
And
right
more
there.
Than several people are fans of us on Facebook.
About if several people are followers of us on Twitter, then by that math, I would say about three times several people.
Yeah, three severals.
Yeah, three severals of people like us on Facebook.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Okay.
It's good to know that kind of thing. So I just want to, I'm not getting paid for this, but the song Always by Erasure is featured in a game that you can find at adultswim.com, which is Robot Unicorn Attack. I just want to promote that. Go play it. It's a lot of fun, and Erasure is awesome. And if Erasure gets paid, if you go play that, then I feel better about myself.
Yeah, you're a big proponent of Erasure.
I spent a lot of time in my teenage years listening to Pop, which is an Erasure like greatest hits album, a compilation, if you will. And, I think that to a degree, Erasure has shaped my life. Not made me gay, but... That shaped my life. You would have thought.
It was a close call. Let's be honest. It was a close call.
No, there was never really any. I mean, like, I wish I could be so leftist that I could say, no, I'm completely open. No, no. Not completely open-minded.
I don't know. I don't think...
I have no
interest. I feel like that's not the same axis as politics. Like, some people place that on the same axis as politics.
It's the imaginary axis that I love.
But it's not so much.
It's the imaginary axis that I love. But I want to talk about Always, the song Always, for a second. Two things. First of all, Always has tautology rock in it, which is one of our favorite things.
We do love pop musical tautology.
The opening lyrics to the song are, "Open your eyes. I see your eyes are open."
Which, I guess now that I'm thinking about it...
It's not necessarily
a tautology.
It's not quite a tautology,
because it's a command.
It's a command.
And then seeing, oh, you have obeyed this command.
And then observing that you obey the command. Which, I mean...
But it's approaching the tautological,
yeah,
certainly.
Yeah, we like that kind of thing. And also that first few lines rhymes open with open, as you pointed out.
Yeah.
Which is good.
It does.
That's solid. And then the other thing about the song, I've never really even thought about it until I was listening to the song while playing Robot Unicorn Attack. And that is that they use the phrase make-believe. And it's a phrase that I've heard since I was a very little kid watching the Mr. Rogers in his land of make-believe.
Mr. Rogers used it. I'm pretty sure he didn't make it up. I believe he got it from, you know, kids generally. That seems like a phrase that's been around for a while.
Yeah, it's been around for a while. But... The thing about it is I just thought about the phrase make believe, and I don't really understand how that refers to pretending. Is it like creating? But I mean, like making as if I believed. Maybe that's like, but it's clumsy. It's a clumsy phrase.
Yeah, I feel like it's along the lines, because I mean, you're talking about a definition of pretending. It's basically, you know, acting as if something you know not to be true is true.
Act believe. I would go act believe.
I know. I feel like, I mean, the act of pretending is, on one hand, it's not the act of making yourself believe. That's convincing.
And, you know? And I actually don't think...
It's making yourself act as if you believe. So it is an odd phrase.
Here's
an odd way to pick that phrase out.
Let's kick some epistemology ass here.
Okay.
Epistemology is the study of knowledge, for those of you not out there. Google it. It's good. You know, maybe put a link in a post on Googling at least how to spell epistemology, because people are like, epistemology, E-P-I-S-S-E-D, no.
I don't think anyone's going to do that.
Anyways, so I think you either believe something or you don't. You can't make yourself believe something. You can pretend. You can act as if, you can act like someone who would believe something. But if you're like, I don't believe that there are ghosts, but I'm just going to play along. You're not making yourself believe that there are ghosts.
I don't know. I think you... I mean, I may be slightly missing what you're saying, but I don't think the act of pretending is the act of making yourself believe something. Those are different things. But I do believe you can make yourself believe something. It's kind of, you know, kind of the fake it till you make it sort of thing.
All right. I don't think so. No. Because if you're making yourself believe something... then there's some part of you that doesn't believe it. I would call that the knowing part, right? The part that actually decides what we believe and what we don't, right? I imagine it as a silver orb that lives inside my brain.
All right, then.
So silver
That's
orb is like...
evocative.
Shut up. Shut up, man. Silver orb is like, hey, I don't... Let's go with the big one. I don't believe in God. Like, I have no evidence, I'm not convinced, but I'm going to go to church, I'm going to pray, and I'm going to blah, blah, blah. No prayers have ever been answered, I've never seen a miracle, but I'm just going to keep going, because I, cultural or whatever reason. And there are a lot of people in this position. A lot of people. Don't look at me like that, there are a lot of people in this position.
No, I agree.
Okay,
continue.
Good.
That wasn't that look, that was me.
Excellent.
That was me thinking about some other stuff.
Think about some other stuff.
I am.
So anyways... So that they can be self-brainwashed, if you will, to the point where they act and there's absolutely no real... There's no conceit anymore. They accept it as a part of the life, but they don't think about the actual knowledge. They don't think about whether they actually believe it as true and would make the claim that it's true, they only go through the like the motions which are external to it, which have nothing to do with it. Going to church, praying, reading the Bible, singing in church, teaching Sunday school have no bearing on whether or not you believe in God. And I would know as a person who, when I was young, did not believe in God and taught Sunday school. Hmm. Mostly arts and crafts. It was like little kids arts
and crafts. Like macaroni crosses kind of thing?
Yeah, I wasn't teaching kids about the resurrection and that, you know, if they didn't accept Christ as their Savior, they would go to hell. I was kind of, I stayed away from that part.
Yeah, yeah, the only, again, macaroni resurrection.
Yeah, but when growing up in my hometown, we didn't have, like, atheist summer school.
Wait, hold on a sec. One more stupid macaroni crafts joke.
Go ahead.
Just to get it out of the way, and then we can continue with actual conversation. Because just the phrase, I think, is in my head, and it needs to get out, because it's sort of catchy and alliterative. Macaroni Mary Magdalene.
Ooh, that's nice.
Alliteration.
I was just thinking
catchy.
In my brain, macaroni, like an art project where you would make a macaroni tube out of macaroni tubes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's pretty.
That's recursive that. A little bit, yeah.
Not too far recursive, but at least one recursive. one iteration, if you will.
Yep.
Because I'm not going to make a macaroni tube out of macaroni tube that's made of macaroni tubes.
No, that's just stupid.
That is stupid. And it's hard to tell that you've done that anyway. No. It just looks like a bigger one. Anyways, so I think that while you may go through the motions and actions that would lead a person, an external observer, to believe something, belief is internal, and it doesn't have to do with how you act. If you go through life believing that, it's a different level of things, but if you go through life believing you're good and you are acting in a way that external observer would not agree to that,
like
then whether
heel,
you're good
example.
Or not, whether you're good or not is in question, right? But I mean, that's an external thing. That's not a belief in whether something is a fact or not, which is what I'm talking about. Like if you believe that A is a fact, your actions may not reflect that.
I agree with that. But I think one thing that I disagree with what you just said essentially is that I think that actions, you know, they certainly don't always reflect belief. You know, they can be independent of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do agree that, you know, the thing you just said is one, you know, situation that can exist. But I think actions also can influence belief.
I don't think that they don't. I'm saying that if you can't, that's still not, I don't think, making yourself believe something.
I think it is. I think you can do that, basically. If you act in a way.
I understand. If you act in a way that you believe that X is true for long enough, then you may be you may say, oh, well, X must be true. I've acted in this way for long enough, right?
Yeah.
But
I think that is entirely possible.
But I don't think that's. I don't know if that's necessarily action making a belief. That's kind of almost like, okay, let's assume in the first place that the person had a reason for believing A or B. Because if we go into a case where a person just believes something for no reason, like without evidence, without any logic to it or anything else, right?
Right.
Let's just say, you know, Susie is, you know, was born and no one ever told her that leprechauns are fake and she's 42 and she thinks leprechauns are real, right? She's never seen a leprechaun. No one's told her that leprechauns do exist.
Or don't.
She's just heard the concept of them, right?
Uh-huh.
Or seen them on boxes, like of Lucky Charms.
Cereal boxes, yeah.
Right. And no one's told her that leprechauns are fake. She has no reason to believe it except maybe seeing a picture or depiction of a leprechaun. Or understanding what the concept is, at least.
I mean, the Lucky Charms commercials are pretty convincing.
No,
give
right.
them that. Give them that.
Does she believe that leprechauns exist or not? I would say that she does. She accepts it as true. She says this is a fact. She just doesn't have a good reason to.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, talking about epistemology, and what mm-hmm. we're getting into right now, I would say, is there are the concepts of belief. There's just the simple concept of belief. And then there's kind of knowledge, which
or,
I think
yeah, rational
sort of
belief.
Like logical. I know that I think the logical positivists or, you know, someone around them defined knowledge as, I think the phrase was, that I'm trying to pull was, justified true belief.
Yeah, justified true belief. Yeah, exactly.
So I think we're talking about beliefs versus like, yeah, I feel like if you have something that you think is knowledge and you start behaving against that knowledge.
Yeah.
That's kind of more like what you were talking about
earlier.
That's
exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I'm saying if you just have something that's a simple belief, yeah, I think you can change that by action.
Okay, I think I would agree with you. If your belief is not a justified true belief, in other words, it's not something that's either because you've witnessed something. Like if Susan sees leprechauns all the time, then to me, she has a justified belief. Not necessarily a true one, but you know, to her it is a justified true belief because she's seen evidence. Right.
Right.
Now, if she was able to compare that evidence with someone and say, hey, you know, Bobby, let's say, I don't know, I'm picking names out of a hat.
Yeah, okay, Susie and Bobby.
Do you
this
see
is
the
a very,
leprechaun?
Like, is
this it's like, the Brady Bunch.
Oh,
or no, Susie's.
I know,
Susie
is it the Brady Bunch? Don't
Cindy.
Think there was a Susie, no.
Cindy
it's the Brady Bunch or the Bobbsey Twins. It sounds like something disgustingly wholesome.
All right. Well, I'll go with crazier names then. We could go back to Plinko and Planko. I love Plinko and Planko.
No, because these need to be people. Those were mere robots. They had moral and ethical
They're
dimensions.
They're robots with real feelings. No,
they had moral and ethical dimensions to them, but they were just robots. So let's say Jugalesh and Hamish.
All right, so Jugalesh sees leprechauns, and Hamish is asked by Jugalesh, do you see these leprechauns? Hamish says no. Now Jugalesh's belief is not justified anymore. But let's... you know, erase. We're just go back to a basic concept here. If you have a belief that has no justification whatsoever, yeah, certainly action can change it. Because there's no, I mean, action is really then almost evidence for the belief. Why wouldn't I do this? And I think that goes, let's, you know, go back on the God topic as I love to do.
Can't stop you.
Can't stop me.
You're a machine.
You love it too. Shut up.
I do. I'm not against it.
No.
If I was against it, I'd try and shut you up more.
People who go to church all the time, who read the Bible, who are raised in the community of Christians, for instance. Let's just use the Christian religions because of its prevalence.
Because it's around. It's handy.
I live in a Jewish neighborhood, but I still am bombarded by Christianity. Anyways, because the Jews have no religion bombs. If you get right
and
down
now
to
you
it.
Get there's the vans.
They have the vans
and there's
with the
people
menorahs,
who,
yeah.
people outside the Giant Eagle who hand out the mitzvah cards.
Oh, I haven't gotten those because I don't go to that Giant Eagle enough.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so you have these people who grow up in these communities and they're exposed to this stuff all the time. They have no reason to believe it except everybody else around them believes it. No one ever gives them evidence, but I would still say, you know, the reason there that almost the action and just the surrounding culture is what justifies the belief. That's why, as you know, I'm a pretty forgiving atheist. There are people who have much more radical beliefs than me, who would say something like, "People, Christians, or people who believe in God are deluded," which I would say no, because the delusion is something that your belief, where your belief differs from the masses. If everybody believes something, then it's reasonable for you to believe it too.
So then what do you think, out of curiosity then, about the phrase mass delusion? Does that not make sense as a concept for
it does,
you, given
it,
your...
It does make sense as a concept, because
idea of delusion?
A mass delusion can affect a group of, let's say, 20 people.
Ah, okay, so it's just a matter of scale.
People. Right. A mass delusion which affects 90% of a population...
Suddenly stops being a delusion?
It's not a delusion. They might be wrong, but you can't call it... You couldn't call an individual person a delusion, a delusional person, for believing what everybody around them believes. Now, they may be a group of deluded people, or the delusion... Yeah, I mean, actually, you could say the mass delusion affects 90% of the people. Because then what you're doing is you're separating the delusion from it being a
from
person's
people,
fault...
From being a person's sort of negative
being
characteristic.
Being a gestalt, right? Being like kind of a gestalt effect. Like a, you know, just the groupthink kind of thing. So, I mean... I guess mass delusion has a lot of different applications, but you can't. I wouldn't call an individual person delusional if their beliefs line up with the beliefs of everybody around them. Not that belief is delusional, at least. Now, other beliefs may be delusional. As a curiosity, I always find, which is, if someone in a community like that says, you know, I was sitting at home, and I was alone, and God spoke to me, and I think that I'm going to pursue writing. You know, I really just think this means something to me, right?
That sounds right. Completely reasonable, doesn't it?
No one would think twice about that in most American communities, right?
I don't know. That depends on the sort of flavor of religion, doesn't it? Yeah, you know, I mean, your personal God, yay, nay.
Most people are okay with that, though. Most forms of Christianity are okay with personal God.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I am not a Christianity expert.
That's kind of how their shizzle flows, man. Anyways, so that's perfectly reasonable. Now, let me just insert, like, a prepositional phrase into that. And you tell me how it affects the people surrounding.
Okay, so
I was sitting home alone. And I was just thinking about stuff.
Right.
And, you know, suddenly God spoke to me through my toaster. And I really think that he wants me to be a writer. I think that's the path for my life.
Yeah, the specifics.
Suddenly.
Yeah, more specifics not make that seem less believable. That's kind of, which really conceptually on the face of it. Those ideas are no are equivalent.
There should be no problem with God speaking through a toaster. There should be no problem with it. God could do anything, right? Talk through a burning bush. I mean, that's worse than a toaster. But that would radically change the way people perceive that person's admission. Suddenly the story goes from a sweet religious revelation to, I think this person's schizophrenic.
I think I could tell you what the difference is.
Go ahead.
Off the top of my head.
I mean, I've thought about this a long time. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of...
Yeah, I would say my sort of snap idea of what the difference is. I mean, ignoring the fact that one just sort of, even though they're kind of on a certain, you know, metaphysical level, the same thing, just the fact that the toaster thing sounds sillier.
Mm-hmm.
I think the idea is that when a lot of, you know, people, especially people who aren't, like, aggressively religious to the point where God talking through an object would be like, oh, yeah, of course, that's what he does. Sort of consider, you know, God talking to you as sort of an allegory for, you know, things that happen inside your own head.
Exactly.
And, like, you know, a voice in your head and, you know, like, things like that. You know, things that come from, you know, maybe your subconscious or, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like people take that allegory. So when it's just like, you know, God really wanted me to be a writer and, you know, talk to me through that, you know, people are just like, you know, oh, okay, you know, sort of that's where, you know, kind of these thoughts in your head, you know, bubbled up and gave it this. Okay, that makes perfect sense. Whereas then if you say through the toaster, that draws a hard line. Yeah.
Well, there's an external voice all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I've thought about that a lot and I realize that's kind of where the, you know, difference comes from. But the funny thing to me is that, again, you bring up a new kind of dichotomy, if you will, of if a voice in your head tells you something to do something and it's God, that's okay, unless you're killing somebody. If a voice tells you in your head to do something and you don't think it was God, then you're crazy again.
Well, we have no problem also telling people that a voice in their head and they thought it was God. We have no problem telling some of those people they're crazy.
Yeah. It's funny.
It all depends on what it's basically. Again, with the writer thing, it helps that is a voice that is telling you something that also happens to be, you know, fairly well within community norms.
Right. Well, that's exactly, I think. 'Cause
it's kind of interesting how, you know, whether a voice in your head is the true work of God, you know, or is, you know, you is crazy. How that has a lot to do with how neatly that voice is fitting you within the norms of society.
Exactly. And that's kind of like my overriding point is, like, how you could still...
God slots kind of oddly neatly into where you want him to be.
How, like, limited that God, the God that people believe in, has become. If you look at the Bible, God tells a guy to go kill his son. The guy takes the knife, takes his son up to the mountain, throws him down on the altar, and he's about to do it when God tells him, no, 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 I'm just kidding. If a parent did that today, even
round
though God has
disapproval.
Shown, right.
Round disapproval.
Probably an arrest. I mean, the church community would frown on it. But that's the thing. It's like there was a manifestation that you believe is true that did exactly this thing. That thing is completely disallowed by our modern concept of society. How can you not realize that it's because nothing, like, God didn't change. It just was never there in the first place. I mean, it's the same thing with slavery. Like, people don't realize that the Bible was used to justify slavery in the South.
Until it wasn't.
Until it wasn't. Exactly. Yeah. Because there are plenty of lines in there about how to keep slaves. And they mostly benefit the Jews, let's face it. If people had been reading their Bible strictly, you know, slavery would be fine as long as it was the Jews who were the slave owners.
And slavery was just Bible, slavery, goofy. So, circling back around
to making believe. Yeah, so to me, it does depend on the belief. But if you have a justified true belief, or even a justified belief, and nothing changes, no new data is introduced to you, and you act like you don't believe it, or you act like you do believe something that you know you have no reason to believe, to me, you're not really believing that thing. You're just pretending.
Which, in that case, you know, maybe make believe, maybe swapping, circling again around to our original complaint, maybe make believe is fine then.
No, we I seem don't to think be... it is. I mean, it depends on how you take the phrase just make short, believe.
I do think we were right off the bat.
It is short for making as if you believe. Yeah.
Making yourself act as if you believe.
Yeah.
But 5-year-olds aren't going to say that sentence because it's a clunky as shit sentence.
All right, well, just say pretend, kids. Come on. I mean, why did that word...
All the kids who are listening to this.
Yeah,
you
know, well,
those 5-year-olds who fucking love epistemology.
They're really, really strong on it, but... Oh, well. All right, let's take a break. Come back. We got more material coming up on part 2 of episode 29 of I'm Trying to Think.
You got this in pocket. You can fathom. I am gonna use it. Intention.
And welcome back to episode 29 of I'm Trying to Think. Chuck Warner is me. Dave Stern is you.
Yes.
Not the listener. Yeah, not the listener. You, the guy.
Me here, yeah.
Over there.
It would have helped. He was pointing, which was helpful to me, but not so much helpful to you, the listener.
And that was Brass in Pocket by the Pretenders. You get that? Because of pretending and to make believe. Yeah,
I think they got it.
It's a joke and it's funny. All right. Dave.
Yeah.
So, I don't really listen to the pop music or know what the bands are these days, right? But I saw this mention of this band, Lady Antebellum, which at first I thought was maybe like the South's answer to Lady Gaga. Turns out I was wrong. It is like a whole band of people.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you unaware, Antebellum is the period in history...
Before
the American Civil War.
The war.
In America, before the American Civil War. So you're talking slavery days.
Although on the other hand, you know, I feel like it's even more specifically, I think the period in terms of history, because I have not once in my life heard anyone talk about the antebellum North.
No, no one talks about that.
Because that's boring. It was a lot like the postbellum North.
If you want to know why no one talks about that, it's because the Civil War didn't result in Sherman burning down half the North.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
not that many changes, you know.
No.
It didn't result in the takedown of, let's say, industrialization, that being, you know, no, the system upon which the economy of the North was built.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite of what happened, if you will. So anyways. So and here, would you like a little sample, Dave?
Probably not, but I'm gonna get one.
You don't want it, but here
I'm gonna get one.
This is a little sample of Lady Antebellum. This is Need You Now. I mean, first of all, it doesn't strike me as very antebellum. I don't hear a banjo.
I don't hear a jug.
I don't hear a jug.
A washerboard.
No, nothing like that. This is just, I mean, this is crap. I don't like to be judgmental. Let's fast forward a little bit, see what we got in the middle. No. This is... This is terrible.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about bad pop country.
Let's talk about a few things here
Bad pop country.
Let's talk about the awkwardness of the glorification of the antebellum South.
Yeah, there's kind of an elephant in the room with that. And that elephant is slavery. Yes. That elephant is slavery.
Yes, that elephant is slavery. So, I mean, I don't understand that. Like, how do you get... Like, it's like Germans having pride in World War II. They can't really... You can't do it.
Well, there's a thing that's kind of interesting about this whole thing, in my opinion, is in terms of just... Because there is this real sort of human, you know, instinct and almost need to, you know, glorify and take pride in, you know, your heritage and your ancestors.
Yeah, well, you don't want to feel like your genes are polluted.
Yeah.
Even though they are, let's face it.
Yeah, but then there's some... But yeah, sometimes there are just, you know, obvious screaming wrong things that happened and, you know, how does someone deal with that? And there are kind of a lot of psychological strategies. I think there's one, you know, which I think some of the antebellum South glorification is, which is if you didn't think it was wrong, it was fine to glorify. You know, that's some of it. But I don't think that's all of it.
I don't really think it's that bad.
You know, some of it is, you know, if you're... You know, if you're racist, then it's okay to glorify the antebellum South.
If you don't think slavery was that bad, you don't even have to be racist. You could just be like, well, you know, those black people were really taken care of.
Well,
you could have the wrong idea.
Okay, you could be just massively ignorant.
Yes.
Okay.
Dave, massively ignorant describes an enormous amount of people in this country, not just in the South.
That's true. It's probably the world. I mean,
yeah,
a lot of people
the whole world, but...
don't know a lot about a whole lot of things.
And they like to talk about things like, you know, it just makes them, it eases that cognitive dissonance. Like, I like the dresses and the houses from the antebellum period.
Yeah, I like a mint julep.
So I want the whole thing to be nice.
I like a mint julep. I like verandas.
I'll take this part that's really bad and I'll wrap it in like a fuzzy blanket.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a lot of it. You know, the people who are not actually racist, and sometimes even the people who aren't, they might even not even be ignorant, but you just kind of want to... You just brush that part away and don't think about it.
Cognitive dissonance is a wonderful
thing. But then on the other hand, then there's the other reaction, which I would call, like, the sort of late 20th century awkward Germans. Like,
go ahead.
That's kind of really interesting, because I've always found sort of German society, you know, kind of post-Nazism, really interesting. Like, just kind of the reaction, like, the way that, you know, they really just sort of clamp hard, you know, on, you know, like, owning Nazi stuff, you know, talking about Nazis.
Yeah,
like,
just no
real clamp down. Just a very, like, yeah, we...
Actually, it's funny.
We know
just,
this was bad, and we kind of just want to not have you talking or thinking about it.
Well, the thing is you know, lots of German soldiers survived, and their children are the modern... German citizens.
Well, at this
some
point,
they're
grandchildren.
Yeah,
I mean, they're grandchildren at this point, which moves it even
I mean, but some
more
of them
forward.
Are still alive. You know, I mean, some World War II veterans are still alive. And it's just, it must be weird.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm sure that most of them, or just a lot of them, you know, weren't, you know, Nazis in, like, the cartoonish, evil Nazi way. You know, most of them are probably just people.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of... If you talk about mass delusion, there's a lot of mass delusion involved in the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, you take a downtrodden people and you just kind of, like, sweep them into brainwashing. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, some of them were. Some of them just, you know, were, you know, soldiers in an army and then they did it with it. And then some of it, you know, it's just got to be weird. You're going into your sunset years. You know, it's not like, you know, American veterans where it's like, you know... You get, you know, just Tom Hanks and Tom Brokaw, you know, kind of sucking you off all the time. And it's just like, you know, sort of very satisfied, you know, senescence, you know, just good guys did the right thing. Last Just War, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, Burns documentaries left and right, yeah.
Yeah, with the sort of the fading German soldier, you just, what, I can't even comprehend what they, what must go through their brains and just how it works,
you
know.
It's got to be...
I mean, it's
got to
be weird for the ones who are just, you know, reasonable, decent human beings. It's got to also be quite weird for the ones who, you know, bought the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, what about the ones who bought the whole thing and they're still in it? Like...
I don't know.
Just old, faded, like, you can't try them for... Like, I'm not talking about, like, you know, the war crimes guys who hide in Argentina, you know, you want Nuremberg to get them, you know, whatever, whatever. But
yeah.
I'm just talking about, like, you know, you're a German soldier, you know, the ones who, you know, actually had that belief set and kept it, you know, because I feel like some of them, you know, still must be, you know, 85-year-old Nazis, but not war crime Nazis. You know, what did they do?
I can't.
How do they feel?
I can't imagine with how strong the sentiment against everything that Nazism stood for. I mean, that sentiment is so strong in Germany. I can't imagine any veteran who, even if they bought the whole thing at the time, that you've got it, that your brain has to deconstruct all that stuff and destroy it. I mean it's got to go out with the trash. There's no way you could continue to live in German society, you know, and still in your mind embrace that kind of thing. You would be...
I mean, on the one hand,
it would be
like
a nightmare.
Society is so overwhelming, you know, with the pressure to repudiate that, that you have to think that most people took the chance. But man, some people are just very stubborn, you know?
I don't know.
I'd have to think there are just...
I don't know.
There's got to be some, like, yeah, 85-year-old just straight-up Nazis around somewhere.
Yeah, they'd be at least 85. They'd pushing 90, probably.
Yeah,
at
yeah.
They
don't get to be the greatest generation.
It was an interesting thing, actually. I was
sad
just talking about the swastika. And, you know, it's a...
Yeah, it's the Hindu
Hindu sign. It's a, you know, found actually all throughout.
Yeah, but it's a different direction, isn't it?
No, both directions.
It is the straight up.
Yeah, both directions.
I'm remembering there's something that's an opposite direction swastika too, isn't there?
Yeah, one's called the... I don't know. I don't really want to guess because I don't know all about it. I know they go in both directions. I don't know why.
Swastika swings both ways.
Yes, sir. But like it not only in India was that a symbol, but it actually spread. I was looking at old samurai armor, pictures of samurai armor, and it was kind of funny to me to see this samurai helmet with a swastika right on the forehead.
Man, that seems like a B movie waiting to happen, doesn't it?
It was like Charlie Manson's samurai helmet.
That, man.
But the symbol means, like, it's good. It means, I think it might represent the sun, but it definitely is, like,
yeah,
a good
it's
luck
a positive
charm.
Symbol.
Yeah.
I just want to say, man, it already sounded like a B-movie when you were just saying, you know, Nazi Samurai. When Nazi Samurai Charlie Manson,
yeah,
that's, like, the B-movie. That is is such a B-movie.
But the swastika is banned in Germany. Banned.
Yeah, so I'm just going to say,
No samurai.
when we produced Nazi Samurai Charlie Manson, do we change the symbols for Germany, or can you just not do it in Germany? Like, how do all the Nazi movies, like, how does that work in Germany?
I think that they, they do a lot of World War II movies in Germany. High quality movies about World War II. And some of them humanize, I don't want to say humanize Hitler, but they kind of contextualize a lot of stuff and try and
right
not humanize Hitler like we should feel bad for him or we should understand
but put him
but
in a context as a person
put the whole thing in the context
like, you know,
as a
the
person.
Figurehead yeah.
Right anyways they're very strict about how all those movies are made too very very strict I would imagine that when it comes to like a historical film or something or a documentary or just pieces of history that the band doesn't cover it but I have no idea.
But,
I mean, I don't feel good about the ban in the first place.
So
I don't think that it should
for
be banned. But I'm not German.
So a fine piece of, you know, historical, I think, context-adding documentary like Nazi Samurai Charlie Manson.
Yeah. I think that movie would not make it to Germany.
It'd be tricky.
Yeah, I don't think that movie would make it to Germany. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to handle it. I just know that it's banned. Yeah, that's it. Don't know. Don't know what to tell you. I don't feel good about that. But again, I'm not German. I don't really have a say in this.
Free speech. Yeah, I know what you mean because I have that.
I don't think
it's
that
American sort of
yeah.
free speech instinct is kicking in where it's like, that doesn't seem right.
Overrides everything else.
But on the other hand.
No, I don't think there is another hand.
I don't know.
The people will be condemned privately. There's no reason for the government to have to step in. You know? It's the same thing with the Confederate flag. To me, like, it's a symbol of ignorance and idiocy. And I treat everyone who would, you know, emblazon that on themselves or on their cars or on their homes, I treat them with disdain, and that's, you know, exactly, that's the punishment you get. I don't need the federal government to step in. I don't need a state or local government to step in.
Well, I think similarly, like, the state and local government trickiness with the Confederate flag thing is not necessarily making them take down someone's Confederate flag. It's making that state government not put them up. That's a trick in some places.
There was a guy who lived across the street from my parents who flew the Confederate flag outside his, you know, on his house. We live
in my Pennsylvania. Parents live
in Pennsylvania. That is quite literally north of the Mason-Dixon line.
That's dumb as hell. It's just dumb as hell.
And he's not from the South. He was born in the Pittsburgh area. I don't know how far back his family stretches in the Pittsburgh area, but I would guess, like most of the people around where I grew up and around here, period, his family immigrated over after the Civil War was over. What possible symbolism or representation does that flag have outside of his house except racism, bigotry, segregationism, and that kind of thing?
That's it, pretty much. It's just if it's not an actual part of his heritage, then he doesn't even have sort of the lame defense for it. It's just straight up.
Yeah. That defense would be racism, lame. Like, yeah. It's like, well, I hang a knife over my bed because my great grandfather was a knife murderer, and I want to, you know, I just want to, you know, remember his heritage. No, if your ancestors do something wrong, own up to it. I mean, you're not responsible. I'm not holding you responsible. But you shouldn't glorify people who did stuff wrong. I mean, it's just that's just a period exclamation point kind of statement for me. Doesn't matter who they are. Anyways, but let's talk about another thing, which is that stupid twang that Southern bands have. Because this music is just crappy, like, pop music. Like, it's
light pop rock. It's not country music in a real country sense.
It's got the piano kind of. It's like adult contemporary.
Yeah, it's BS. Adult contemporary
with a twang, very light, and then they call it country.
Slight twang. Yeah, the same way that, like, Shania Twain was just making late '90s pop music in a very standard way, but happened to be Southern.
Precisely. Yeah. But I mean, if you trace that twang back, that they sing that way because they heard probably people like Willie Nelson or. Like a Waylon Jennings or somebody, or maybe they actually heard, you know, Hank Williams, who Willie Nelson really, and those people kind of get that style of singing from. And Hank Williams pretty much got it from black people singing blues and things like that, and bluegrass. So if you want to know irony, it's that Lady Antebellum's little twangy voice singer is really just, you know, in a long line of people who've kind of stolen musical tradition from the slaves who suffered, you know,
in the antebellum era. Which is, I mean, that's American music, though. And also, I've got to say, though, her twang wasn't even that twangy. Like,
she
didn't even, like, I've heard kind of, like, you know, like a Carrie Underwood, Taylor Swift kind of twang. Yeah. And, you know, she wasn't even at that level. Like,
no, they soften it. You soften it every... No,
she softened it more. Like, that was the bare minimum of twang to be country adult contemporary as opposed to standard adult contemporary.
Exactly, you have to. Or like, you can get away with a lot of twang in some music. Because if you twang, like, Shania Twain might be a person who was played on regular pop stations, but people who twang like her but do basically the same music, or who do rock or light rock stuff with twang, don't get played on mainstream radio, don't get played on rock stations. They are relegated to country stations. And if you want to cross, cross genres with twang, you have to be really careful or really soft. It's just the way it is. They don't play, it's the same damn music, but they won't play sort of country rock on a country station unless there's a twang. And it's ridiculous, but that's where we stand in American music. You know, the twang is actually what separates the music, even though the rest of it is the same.
Yeah, the twang, as opposed to just being, you know, this is the way some people from some places sing, you know, which is how it should be.
But it's
is a genre signifier in itself, which is odd.
Yeah, it's odd, but it's kind of funny because I've run into a lot of people talking to people about music because I like Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Charlie Daniels. I like that, like the old, like kind of 70s to early 80s country music stuff. You know, honky tonk, I really like. So you talk to people about the fact that, yeah, I like country music, I like honky-tonk music, and they're like, I can't stand country music because of the twang. And I'm like, the music is the same. Like, but, you know, people will say, I don't like country, and they basically mean, I don't like that accent. It's, and, you know, if we walked 30 miles from here, we'd find people who thought that was the way they talked, which is really funny. People in rural areas in Pennsylvania have the same, or think they have the twang that people in the South do. I'm sure it's true in New York and Minnesota and
yeah, anywhere else. You go, anywhere that has a rural area, it's not all a region. Like, there's weird mixes of, you know, actual regionalism versus, you know, just rural urban divide kind of stuff.
Yeah. Anyways, we went on and on about that, and I think that was probably mostly boring, but we really exposed some pieces of American culture there, Dave.
Sure.
We exposed them with that knife.
Let's say, you're a knife murdering grandfather's knife?
He was a good man. He was a great grandfather, knife murderer.
Wait, was there a hyphen in there? Is he a great grandfather knife murderer, or was he a great grandfather and a knife murderer?
Actually, as luck would have it, he was a great grandfather knife murderer who was my great grandfather.
Oh, so he's a great grandfather knife. He's a knife murderer of great grandfathers. Who is your grandfather's father?
Yes.
Okay.
He's a great grandfather knife murderer.
All right, and you know, be proud of that heritage.
That's why I keep the knife, Dave.
All right. I think with that, we're about ready to take a little break.
And we'll be back with more I'm Trying to Think.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again, going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again, like a band of gypsies, we go down.
Hey, and welcome back to episode 29 of I'm Trying to Think with Chuck Warner and Dave Stern. That was Willie Nelson's On the Road Again.
I feel like it's almost not necessary to say that. I think the people know.
That was Willie Nelson's I Like Whores and Booze.
That's just a lie.
Now shut up.
Saying lies.
Hey, you had to ruin my intro. Anyways. Now, that's a honky-tonk song. That's good music that I like. I like it. And that's all. Settled.
Okie dokie.
All right, Dave, you have an etiquette question for me, bringing us back to the old segment. Dave asks Chuck an etiquette question.
Yeah, I believe this may have been our first segment ever, and it's certainly our least loved. So, bringing it back.
Bring it back around, Dave. Give it to me.
Just going to start with some context.
All right.
Because, now, I think, as you know, like, a couple things, in sort of just the past maybe 5 to 6 years, a couple sort of things sort of have happened demographically, kind of arts and crafts wise.
All right.
I would say one, which is, you know, not 100% relevant to this, but that's not going to stop me from talking about it briefly. All right. Just to mention it exists, is that at some point, maybe like 5 years ago, everyone with a Mac computer was like issued some, like a memo or a notice or something that says, you are now a prosumer level photographer, go buy a DSLR camera. So that happened. Like,
okay, I believe you.
Well, I mean, I can name at least four of our friends who at any given event we'll be at will be taking pictures of us with a DSLR and editing them on their Mac and posting them to Flickr.
All right, and let's assume that that applies to some sort of general populace. Go ahead.
I'm pretty sure it does, but that's not the relevant.
I'm willing to believe you.
But that's not the relevant part. That was just an aside.
I am willing to take this as a fact for the purposes of this discussion.
Okay, which is funny because now that I've said it, it will come up nowhere in the rest of this discussion because it's not relevant. It was a complete aside. Complete aside.
Well, I'm glad I spent all that money believing it. Go ahead.
But anyhow, the other sort of arts and crafty thing that happened demographically in the past 5 years was basically every woman aged, I don't know, maybe 18 to 35 or 40 became a knitter.
Yeah, I noticed that. I don't know what that's all about, but
that was a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
My wife has been knitting since we started dating, which is interesting.
Yes, so, it's about that time frame.
And it's about that time frame, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, actually, she learned to knit and crochet when she was a kid, but never did it
again. but then everyone picked it back up.
Yeah. She picked it back up because I wanted a scarf.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which actually kind of...
I just want to say, it's all about me.
Yeah, of course. But this actually kind of wraps back towards what my etiquette question is.
All right, well, go ahead.
Because here's the thing. You, during this kind of knitting, you know, kind of the renaissance of, you know, women in their, you know, 20s and 30s knitting,
mm-hmm.
have dated and then married one person.
Yeah, that's... I haven't dated and then married too many people.
No.
But the one person, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas, as someone who's dated a couple people, here's something that happened to me, like, a few... Like, I don't know, maybe a couple weeks ago. And kind of made me ponder a bit, so...
All right.
You know, I'm getting ready, you know. It's cold, it's winter, I'm bundling up. You know, I'm looking at, you know, my hats, my scarves, my things. You know, put on a hat, very nice hat, made for me by a lady.
All right.
Then...
So far, so good.
Looking at my scarves...
Uh-oh.
And what I look at is scarf made for me. You know, perfectly nice scarf by a different lady.
Uh-oh. Did not combine them. How many lady scarves do you have?
No, I actually have...
Or lady scarves and hats.
I think a total of lady-made knitwear, I have 3 things by 2 ladies.
So you have 3 things by 2 knitty mamas.
Yes, sure. I might quibble with the word knitty mama, but for the sake of expediency, we'll go forward. So I was thinking, didn't mix. Felt tacky to mix them. Didn't
want to
mix them.
All right.
Do you think that's tacky?
Oh, man.
Or should you just... Does it not matter? Should you not go?
All right. Like, here's a couple things.
There was a lot to unpack there for me.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack.
Felt wrong, so I went...
Where were you going?
Just out. Sort of generically out.
Were you going to see either of the girls?
At that point, I think no.
Okay. Were either girls there when you were putting the thing on?
No.
That it didn't matter. Didn't matter. Now, here's the kicker. Honestly, the thing that was made for you by the previous girl, let's say ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
If you want to use those terms.
That's what we're dealing with here. That all right.
That thing should probably be kind of tucked away as long as you have a new knitty mama.
Yeah,
it should kind of
I
be tucked away.
That's about right.
And unless you're on really good terms with the ex-girlfriend and you're like going to, you know, hang out with her or something, then you wear it, you know, haha, look, I wear my... But you don't wear the thing made by the new girl because inevitably she's going to notice it's handmade and she's going to ask and that's...
Yeah, that's a kettle of fish. Like, on the other hand, this is where what also comes in handy, what has had to come to, and this actually less had to come to and more that I happen to have. I've got some neutral... machine-made knitwear.
That's good.
Like, I've got a neutral hat and I've got a neutral scarf.
That's good. That'll keep those are the things that will keep you alive, Dave. Those are the things that will keep you alive through this. But, I mean, if you want to put them both on, if you want to put both things made by the different knitty mamas on and go out and feel like you got a harem, you know, then, I mean, good for you.
Nah, I don't know. Cause
you're like, yeah, look at all the ladies I got, you know?
That's not at all. It felt wrong. It felt just like mixing. It felt bad, like bad juju.
Maybe, like, well, let me...
Didn't feel right.
Let me ask you a question.
Which is why I didn't do it.
Let me ask you a question. This might tap in here.
Yeah, I went with, you know...
Was possibly like one wool and one, you know, poly blend or something?
Maybe.
Because maybe what you were feeling...
Was literal discomfort?
Was the...
not figurative?
No, what I'm saying is maybe you're feeling spiritual discomfort as wearing a... You know, blended fabrics is against Torah law, if you will.
Mm-hmm. That's also possible.
Yeah, that's Leviticus. I'm pretty sure. So
yeah, so maybe I should be going making like an ex girlfriend calls around, just being like, okay, what kind of yarn was this?
Yeah, because I can't wear blended fabrics anymore now that I'm an Orthodox Jew.
I found religion.
Because
man,
it's one thing if you like. You know, I'm anti-cruelty to animals, so I don't want anything made out of wool. And you're like, no, I can't take this. It's made out of wool. Which happened to my wife. She did something for somebody, and they were like, oh, no, this is wool. I'm vegan. I can't have it. Right,
although,
angry vegan.
I got a good...
It's a different thing if you're like, here, take this, and you're like, oh, this is a polycotton blend. I'm sorry, that's...
I've got to say, though, I give sort of angry but sort of snide but consistent vegan gets more credit in my mind than leather vegan.
Shame on leather vegan. Well, maybe leather vegan is also a freegan and the leather shoes were in the trash.
Well, in that case, shame on all freegans. So my shame is consistent.
I don't think
my shame remains.
I don't think freegans and shame are two words that go together.
I think they go together very well.
Well, I mean,
in deserving.
I don't think they
in
have
deserving.
Any.
Okay, that's fair.
If you have shame, I don't think that's the course you pursue in life. And I'm not here to be a big... I come not to praise shame, but to bury it, so...
Okay, so, but overall, just to sort of tie this etiquette
the answer
to
the question is, you know, it only really gets tricky if you're with one or the other and they know the backgrounds of all your knitted materials.
But I feel like sometimes, even if they don't know... There's good guesses, so I don't
know.
My general default is
a knitter knows a handmade item.
Yeah, my general default one, just because it felt wrong otherwise at the time, and two, just because it seems like the smart way to play it is one lady per outfit.
One lady per outfit. All right. Well, I mean, now are you including like what if like an ex-girlfriend got you a ring or a necklace that you wear, a coat or the underwear or socks?
You mean just
like
machine-made
products? Yeah, machine-made products.
I think at that point...
Are those free of entanglements?
I think you can free those from entanglements unless they built up a lot of relationship sentiment. Because, one, you can get away with it on a purely mechanical level because they're not, you know, handmade things. And two, I feel like they don't start with that sort of automatic sentiment buildup that a handmade thing will start with.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I think you can get away with it.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, that's...
I don't know. It depends on the item. It really does depend on
like
the item.
Just your opinion, man.
Also, gift underpants, I think that's... One, that would just be weird. And two...
Is that something you have to get rid of?
Maybe. I don't know.
Let me ask
this
you a question. This is
a
man question.
I feel like dudes don't get gift underpants as much.
That's a man question, though.
Yeah.
What if you got a gift of her underpants? Do you got to get rid of those when you break up?
Oh, God, probably.
That's,
I don't know.
You can't keep those, man.
That doesn't
sound... You do not want anybody happening upon them. That's all I'm saying.
No, that's... No good could come of that.
If you have a safety deposit box, maybe. That's about it, though.
Even then, I mean, the problem is, I think that honestly changes you as a person, just on a psychic and metaphysical level. If you're a guy who has a lady's underpants in a
safety deposit box, you know... I just want to get it. Let's just reach out.
And I don't think they're good changes either.
Let's reach out and touch someone. If you're a guy who has ladies' underpants given to you by a lady in a safety
freely
deposit
given,
box.
Not purchased.
Freely given, not purchased from a lady.
Or you know what the hell? If you purchased a lady's underpants and put them in a safety deposit box.
Yeah, actually,
sure.
Why not?
That's,
either
that's
way,
interesting
email
in all sorts
us.
Of different ways.
You should email us at contact@imtryingtothink.com.
Just tell us what the deal
really,
is.
Really, if you have any funny ladies' underpants stories, I think we
tell
could probably
us what
go.
The deal
yeah,
is.
We could go forward with them. But Dave, you have another topic, so let's cut the ladies' underpants short. And go ahead to your next little bit here.
All right, sure. This is a little final thing. Just a little bit of snow roundup, because it just happened shortly after our last show where we talked about snow in more detail. Yeah,
we've been covering snow.
This was when the parking situation hadn't quite normalized, but it was starting to normalize, so, you know, there were spaces open. So basically, the space I dug out was briefly for a couple hours occupied by Alexis. You know, naturally, these stories all start with Alexis. But so I parked in another space that was open, you know, no chairs reserved, blah, blah, blah. So then the next morning, I found on my car under some snow the following notes. I think I'll give it over to Chuck to read. One, just to give him something to do.
In my dramatic
voice.
Two,
to give him, you know, to give it a different voice from mine.
To whom it may concern. You should donate $10 to Haiti. You took a spot dug out by a 56-year-old that's had a heart attack. It's the least you could do. Also, no one else has parked here since last Monday, since I dug it out. Not signed.
No, certainly not signed.
Anonymously given. Yeah.
Just, there's a lot of questions that this raises for me. Just, one, on a procedural level, if you care enough to leave, you know, a snippy note, why didn't you care enough to throw a chair in there?
Yeah, Dave, I realized something else about your note.
Yeah?
That I didn't realize the first time I had seen it. It's actually on the piece of paper upside down.
Oh,
it was written from the bottom up.
That's very true. He took, a legal pad and turned it upside down, and he wrote that note.
Yeah, or something.
That
he didn't
mysterious.
Rip it cleanly, I can tell you that much. This is like a half moon kind of rip. Through the bottom.
Yeah, yeah, we can take a picture or something, but it's in rough shape.
There's a couple things that I notice. First of all, it's not the least you could do.
No, the least I could do is nothing.
That is always the least you can do. If you care that much, yeah, you should.
He should have reserved it. I mean, that is clearly within the etiquette of our society. Because people are doing it. That's a norm.
Yes, it's a norm.
Like, I would have, you know, I feel like if you, it's a weird psychological place to be in where it's like putting down a parking chair or whatever is not in my bounds as a thing to do, but leaving the snippy note is.
The other thing is,
that's weird.
I think you should have forwarded the note to Alexis.
Yeah, I should have kind of passed it on.
And said, I found this note on my car. Please donate $10 to Haiti.
Yeah, just kind of pay it forward.
Not to relief. Give it to the Haitian government so that some corrupt official can embezzle it.
Of course.
Then you could have left a note on the spot after you left. Like, the note was forwarded to the guy who stole my parking spot.
Yeah, so hopefully he donated.
Hopefully he'll donate $10 to Haiti.
But then the other thing is, one, you know...
But he drives Alexis, so probably not.
No, but it's a ridiculous attempt to guilt trip me because, you know, there's no possible way I could know, you know, who that an older guy who had a heart attack.
If he had put a walker out there or his medical bills to save the spot, you would know.
Yeah, then I would be a bit of a shitheel for taking it.
But he didn't put anything out there.
No, so the guilt trip doesn't work. But I like that he tried to guilt trip me. But then opposed to just being like, yes, I made him feel shitty. He had this sort of weird, almost noble inclination to use that guilt trip for good. Try to make a positive difference in the world.
He figured you're not going to give him $10.
Well, no, because why would I?
He's trying to pay it forward. You owed him a debt, but he's just going to let it go and pay it forward.
Yeah, as long as I give that debt to, you know, the people who need it most. So, you know, I'm going to say that I salute you for that goofy guilt tripping heart attack guy.
Yeah, good for you. Do you think that it's possible to give us a little bit of a callback? Do you think it's possible that Cat in a Box Man is 56 years old?
Maybe.
There you go.
I don't know. He looked more like a hard-living 30s to me. But
I'm just saying.
He could have been 50s.
What's a hard-living 30-year-old man doing with a cat in a box?
God only knows.
If you have the answer to that or any of the other questions that we pose on this show... Why don't you give us an email at contact@imtryingtothink.com? We like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yeah. Feedback's good. Email is good.
It's true. Dave, do you have anything else?
No, I think we got it.
Man, we destroyed it today. A lot of anger in today's show. That's all right, though, because next episode will be episode 30, and I promised people a special fun time, happy stuff.
So we'll need to, yeah, plan that and execute that.
I need to come up with that probably 3 minutes before we start the show.
Sounds good.
That's how I do. That's how we
that's
get
our
this,
way.
That's why this show is so good, because if we thought about it a week ahead of time, you wouldn't want to hear it. Thinking about it at the time, that's when we think. Those are our best thoughts. Our best thoughts occur at the time when they need to occur.
That's kind of tautological.
Shut up! All right. Thank you for tuning in to episode 29 of I'm Trying to Think. Tune in next week for episode 30. I'm going to speak on behalf of both of us and say, you have yourselves a great 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, now I will leave you with some Steve Miller Band.
Why?
I don't know why.
Why?
I like this song, man. I just like this song. Enjoy.
I probably won't. Oh, if you people could only see what I see. I'm just gonna tell you as this is going. Like,
yeah.
Chuck, for the benefit of the listener at home, has both begun during Erasure and now ended in Steve Miller with some absolutely dumb-looking dances.
All right.
Just straight up.
It's hard to dance
doofus.
In a chair. Shut
yeah,
up.
It's real A-plus kind of doofy chair dancing. Just so y'all know.
Do you know that Steve Miller was given his initial guitar lessons by Les Paul?
Not at all.
Yeah.
That's kind of neat.
That's what we're dealing with.
You'd think he'd be better.
It's fine, whatever. This is a disco song
He's
anyways,
all right.
pretty much. Who cares? All right. Really goodbye this time.
Bye-bye. Man, that is really the least erotic way to express that sentiment possible, isn't it?
Just,
I want to reach out and grab you.
Abracadabra, Dave. Abracadabra.